Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Episode 177 of Below the Belt. Back again, joined by my good friend Craig Scott. How are you, sir?
Good, mate. Good. 177, just missed the light heavyweight limit, but all good. We've given away our titles on the scales. How are you?
Yeah, that's I'm all right. 2 pounds, you know.
I know.
That's when people would start questioning your professionalism, isn't it, really?
Couldn't you have sweated that off? Well... yeah, all good, mate. Looking forward to the weekend, and it's been a busy week. So yeah, I'm all good, man. You're off on holiday. You were saying you've got next week off.
No, I've just got the week off. It's my birthday on Monday. I'm gonna be 40-0. Yeah, I know. I look incredible for it. I've just got the week off. Nothing really planned for it. So that'd be nice. That will be nice. Who's your favourite light heavyweight, as soon as you missed the episode? Any fights stand out? Any fighters stand out? Anything, as you mentioned?
What, at the moment or in general?
General, ever.
I don't really have a favourite light heavyweight, to be honest, mate. Obviously, I watch a lot of boxing, but it's not really a division that's grabbed me by the short and curlies in recent years. I think the British scene's quite nice just now. I'm quite enjoying the people who are lined up and who could potentially fight one another, but it needs to happen, doesn't it? I think we have to see it. We have to see it kicking off. Loving Beterbiev. Love Beterbiev for the last 5 to 7 years. Just that icy cold demeanour, just destroying people. Like Bivol. Bivol kind of went under the radar for a while as well. I hope those two end up fighting, but he sort of plodded along, didn't he? Just keeping people on the end of a jab, and now he's getting a bit of attention after the Canelo win. So interesting to see where the division goes. But I think in the UK, it's wide open for that next crop of light heavyweight.
Yes.
Because everybody that's at the top, they're all kind of 30, just over the other side of 30. And there's not really a lot of sort of young, burgeoning light heavyweights coming through at the moment. So interesting to see where it goes. Who were the other shouts for favourite light heavyweights?
Paul Zanon did the light heavyweight episode. John Conte was talking about him. He was talking about Bob Foster.
Yeah.
He really dug into the crates for a couple of those. I think, yeah, and then obviously some talk on Roy Jones as well.
Yeah.
For me, I always liked Adonis Stevenson. I liked Chad Dawson and I liked Adonis Stevenson, which is weird because they, you know, won the title, went from one to the other.
Yeah,
I liked Adonis. He was just, there wasn't much variety to him, but he was kind of box office, wasn't he? You know, he was one of those guys he looked quite basic, but people couldn't work him out for a long time until I think it was Vosdick that beat him in the end. So yeah, I liked him. I thought he was good.
Yeah, Stevenson was good. He was always one of those guys that would just always dig out a big punch from somewhere, wasn't he? There was always one coming. You just didn't know when it was going to land. He absolutely battered Tony Bellew, didn't he? Which I know you're probably... Didn't he?
He stopped him in the corner. Yeah. I've got the GIF four or five times. Yeah, but when I'm struggling to sleep, I'll just put that GIF on a loop. And that'll send me right off.
My favorite light heavyweight since retiring is Nathan Cleverley. He's off his fucking nut, isn't he?
God bless him. I really liked him, you know, because he worked his way kind of through the traditional route.
Smart guy, maths degree. You know, he seemed like feet on the ground, and then he's living another life now.
Oh, bless him. Well, as long as he's. Do you know what? You know, that's freedom of speech for you. If he wants to go out there and say absolute madness, then it's up to him. As long as he's not hurting nobody, then crack on. I don't know much about him. Best of luck to him. Best of luck to him. It's a hard game, boxing. So, yeah, I can imagine it takes its toll on you. 100%. Talking of light heavies, we've got former light heavyweight titleist Canelo Alvarez. What a way to introduce him, considering he's the undisputed super middleweight champion of the world. Now I think about it, he's racked up a few defences now of the undisputed title. Is he getting into that Calzaghe, Andre Ward kind of space of, you know, being the best super middle?
I think it's hard to say when you look at the people he's run through, isn't it? Like, Callum Smith was supposed to be a decent test, and Callum Smith was a shell of himself. You know, he never really got out of the dressing room in that fight and was kind of overawed maybe by the occasion or by Canelo's confident approach despite being a smaller man. Then he beat, he's beat Yildirim, he's beat John Ryder. You know, no disrespect to John Ryder, I think he put up a great fight, but, you know, he's spent a lot of his career at middleweight and then stepped up and had a couple of losses at super middle. I think when you look at the level of people that Canelo's beaten at super middleweight, he's beaten them all very confidently, but they haven't really been elite level competition, if you like, or the kind of competition that would put him up there with the best super middles. I guess if you look at dominance alone, then maybe. And if he was to fight a Benavidez and beat Benavidez, you go, well, who really stands a chance of beating him? Maybe David Morrell. A lot of people are quite hot on David Morrell, who looks pretty good, the Cuban. And they're all with PBC now, so maybe. But I think he needs a couple of those big fights, to be honest. The super middle run that he's been on hasn't really impressed me that greatly.
No, that's the thing, isn't it? Because if you think about Ward and you think about Calzaghe had longevity in the sense that he had the WBO belt for a long while. But actually, by the time he got to the point of, you know, unifying and winning the lineal title and all of that, he was quickly gone to light heavy. Whereas with Andre Ward, he won the Super Six, wasn't he? He won the Super Six.
Yep, yep.
And then after, I think he beat Chad Dawson after that. Chad Dawson went down to 168, you know. And then he was gone. He did his shoulder and then he was gone. So yeah. Them two don't really, I suppose you could argue Calzaghe has the longevity. I think I'd probably put Ward over Calzaghe, I think just because of quality of wins.
I think you've got to look at Froch.
Yeah.
I don't think you can rule Froch out of that debate. The manner of his wins, the big fights he was in, always exciting as well, and fought a lot of top names. So Froch isn't far away for me in terms of our lifetime. And I think if you go back further, the division was still relatively new. You know, it was generally guys that were a little bit too light for light heavyweight or a little bit too overblown for middleweight, and it's only really became probably a destination division, if that's the way to put it, in the last 20, 30 years. So, yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Put them in order. Calzaghe, Froch, Ward, Canelo.
Ward. Ward. I'm kind of between Froch and Calzaghe, second and third, to be honest, and I would put Canelo at the bottom just now. I think Canelo's biggest achievements were at lighter weights, and I think the only reason I'm putting Ward ahead of the other two is because Ward, for me, never really looked close to getting beat at that weight. He never looked close to getting beat. Those two guys were in some decent scraps. Calzaghe, I suppose you could argue as well. Froch lost a few, but Ward, for me, just looked a level above the whole time he was there. You know, he was under pressure against Kovalev and got put down and scraped a win in the first fight, but yeah, I'd probably go in that order. What do you think? What would you say?
Yeah, probably Ward. It's interesting because both Froch and Calzaghe beat Kessler. So, but what you could argue is Calzaghe, you know, beat a prime Kessler, but also beat the guy to beat at the time, whereas Froch never beat the guy to beat. Like, he never, he got to the final, fought Ward, lost, fought Kessler, lost. Like, so, it's I'd probably go, Ward, Calzaghe, Froch, Canelo. Canelo's an interesting career as well, but we'll get to that in a minute. He's kind of having an Oscar. I'm doing an internal Oscar De La Hoya comparison, but I might be completely wrong because I've not put much thought into it. Canelo won, defended the undisputed lineal whatever super middleweight championships. Oh, that was a bit shit, wasn't it, Craig?
It was it was a big bag of hot air, wasn't it? I think everybody thought it was going to be great and thought that Charlo was going to show up and cause nightmares for Canelo, and it just never really worked out that way. You know, I spoke about Callum Smith sort of never leaving the dressing room when he fought Canelo. You know, arguably Charlo was the same. You know, he stepped up, he seemed full of confidence, he seemed his usual self, and then as soon as the first round was done and Canelo just started walking him down, trying to land one big shot, Charlo seemed to go into a shell, and that confidence was drained until probably the 9th, 10th round, where he started to eventually let his hands go because Derek James was berating him in the corner. But it's a bit of a non-event. You know, it was very one-paced. Canelo now has got this... He's got this sort of... I just used to love watching him when he was throwing combinations. I love watching him throw 5 and 6s, and, you know, when he fought Golovkin... The first second fight against Golovkin, I thought he's so good. You love watching him. Technically, he was brilliant. You know, his combinations were beautiful. He was picking great shots. And now he just seems to want to walk forward and throw a big hook. You know, and he kind of warmed up a little bit and let his hands go a little bit. But the last few times I've seen him, I've just thought the output is definitely slowing down. The feet are slowing down a little bit. He's getting caught with shots that he probably wouldn't. And the Ryder fight's probably a prime example. You know, John Ryder ended up sort of growing into that fight. He was never going to win it, but he landed a couple of tasty uppercuts. You know, he roughed him up a little bit. And Canelo, for me, has totally changed the style that he fights with now. And against a guy like Charlo, who's much smaller and maybe, you know, curls into a ball and shivers in the corner against him, you know, that'll work. But against a guy like a David Moreau or a Benavidez, you know, throwing a single big shot, it's not really going to get you anywhere. If he wants a rematch with Bivol, he loses again, probably wider. I don't think that's the way to beat those guys. And I don't know now. He's almost lowered his output and lowered his style to fight at that pace. At that age, I don't know if you can turn it back up again. I don't know if you can go, well, actually, I'll go back to doing that now. I'll throw punches and punches. I'll throw combinations. I don't know if that's an option. I don't know if that was a choice or if that's something that's been dictated by age, miles on the clock, you know, a little bit too much belief in your own strength and your own power. I'm not sure. It's an interesting one, but I think the fight flattered to deceive, and I think the week before it was probably more interesting than the fight itself.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits.
What do you think? Did you give Charlo much of a chance going into it?
I thought he was good. I think I made the mistake of expecting him to turn up, I think, is to be blunt. I can't remember, I think I was recording with John last week, and I said, look, this is the fight of your life, Jamel. Like, this is it. This is the biggest fight you are ever going to be in. It's you're stepping up 2 divisions against the undisputed champion, a guy that's going to go into the Hall of Fame, the biggest name in the sport. This is your opportunity. And I thought that he would grasp it. I thought the fact that he's taking the fight makes me think, okay, he's going to go for it. But you could see, actually, on the final announcements, how this was going to be, because Jamel looked soft. He looked soft around the middle. The shorts were a little bit high anyway, and I thought, oh, he looks a bit soft, and I thought, yeah, he's in trouble here. Because I thought to myself, okay, he's never going to go back to light middleweight. If you're going to go up to super middleweight, you know, you've got to put on a bit of muscle, and, you know, even if it means you can go back down the middle, you can't go back down to light middle. So you're going to put on a bit of muscle and you're going to go for it. And when I saw him in the ring, a little bit soft, I thought, oh dear. He's just eating his way up to the weight. I'm not saying fat, he was out of shape or anything, but he just wasn't in fight of your life shape. Like, do you know what I mean? He wasn't in that, this is the biggest moment of my life shape. He just wasn't.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think you can tell from there. You made an interesting point about Canelo. And you said something I thought, has he fallen in love with his own power? You know, which you see a lot of fighters do. They'll get the odd stop. They'll get a stoppage here and there. Happened to Matthew Macklin. He beat that guy for the European title and everyone thought he was a puncher after that. And yeah, it seems like, but I think you're right. I think it's surgeries. I think it's age. I think it's wear and tear. And now he's happy to just use ring generalship, walk you down, let you tire yourself out, and then start to pick you off. And that's what he did. It's what he did with Charlo. I think I gave Charlo round 9. I don't think I gave Charlo anything other than round 9. Canelo won everything for me. And then they obviously scored the knockdown in the 7th. And he probably could have got him out of there, probably just about run out of time.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez. And I'm Jason Kelly. From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons. This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
But yeah, so it's interesting because you think of a guy like Benavidez, who is volume. That's a guy that throws in volume. Did you notice the little bit when Jim Gray asked him, "Are you fight David Benavidez afterwards?" His voice just went up an octave. Yeah, no problem.
I think that's an interesting fight. People have been calling for the Benavidez fight for a while. I think there's probably just a bit of reluctance from Canelo's side because Benavidez, as good as he is, he's had a bit of a stop-start career. He hasn't really established himself as a big star. And obviously the same as David Morrell, you know, who's less of a star and less well-known. It's probably that risk v reward type thing. Does he go up and fight Bivol? You know, the old redemption angle and, you know, if he loses, it's still not the end of the world. He can come back down again. Or does he take a chance with a guy like Benavidez or a guy like Morrell and potentially lose? And then people start to really go, is he on the slide now because that's his own weight class or... That's where he's looked so comfortable. It's different measuring yourself against where you've been comfortable, isn't it? You know, it's the same as if you go and do your day job. If you go and do your day job every single day, and then one day you're completely shit at your day job, people go, "What's going on there?" But if you go and do a hobby after work that you never really do, and you have an off night, like playing football or training or whatever, people don't really care because it's just a hobby, right? It's just a one-off. So it's what people have become used to you delivering, and when that starts to slip, then people start to ask questions about whether you've really still got what it takes.
And I suppose, yeah, you're right. With a Benavidez, you can lose to a Bivol, right? Because you can blame the weight. You can blame weight. You can blame styles. You go, do you know what? He's a light heavy. I'm not, right? I'm still the super middleweight champion, right? Which was why he wanted the rematch at light heavy. Because if he lost again, he's still the super middleweight champion. If he loses to Benavidez, he's not the super middleweight champion. He's lost to a super middleweight and he's lost to a Mexican. And he can't lose to a Mexican, which I think is why that voice went up a slightly bit. Because I don't think he wants to fight him because there's a lot of reasons why not. Now, David Morrell, he could get a bullshit decision. You could see him getting a bullshit decision. But that does nothing for him. What's Morrell, like 9-0 or something? 10-0?
It's not.
Whereas Benavidez, his output is going to be so much that I'm not even sure Canelo could get a bullshit decision.
Yeah, I do really like Morrell. I think Morrell's superb. And I think what's good about him is he's almost part of that new age wave of Cuban fighters who aren't just there to try and outscore you the way they would in an amateur bout. Like, he's coming to fucking knock you out. It's the same as, you know, these get Robeson Ramirez now. He's not coming to try and outscore you and win another gold medal. He's coming to try and knock you out. And those Cubans, for me, are the peak in terms of what you want to watch. I used to love watching Cuban fighters when they were just schooling people. Now I love it because it's that combination. They've started to add that spite. It's almost as though the new generation have started to realise if we want to become commercial stars or we want to capture the attention of boxing fans, we can't go out and Rigondo everybody. We have to have something else to add. So really exciting to see where Mirel goes as well. And yeah, I probably doubt that Canelo ever fights him, to be honest.
Yeah, probably not. It's interesting when you say about Cuban fights, because you think about, you know, like Rigondo, Guzman, Lara. You've got these fighters that kind of, like Guzman, what a fucking waste of talent that was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lara, who's kind of had an up and down career. Lara, amazingly, is the WBA middleweight champion of the world, as we speak. fuck knows how. And let's talk about him fighting Danny Garcia. Mental. Mental. Like, if there's an easy belt for Chris Eubank Jr. to get, it's that. Like, come on, Lara is like 48 years old,
yeah,
surely. But
yeah,
bless him, Chris, he doesn't want belts, he wants money, which is absolutely fair enough.
Yeah.
There was, Canelo was like, after the fight, he said, this Canelo, nobody can beat this Canelo. I fucking love boxing, all that sort of stuff. I can't do accents. I cannot do accents. Did he look any better, Canelo, do you think? Did he look like rejuvenated, better, or was he just, did he have a heavy bag in front of him?
I thought he looked very similar to how he looked when he fought Billy Joe Saunders. Marching Charlo down, throwing big shots, in control, wasn't really scared of what was coming back. He had no fear of what Charlo was throwing back. Even when he got, you know, that ninth round you mentioned, when he got hit with a couple of nice combinations, they made no dent, really, did they? He kind of walked through them, shook them off, marched forward and threw another big shot. To me, he didn't look worse than he's looked in the last two or three fights. But he didn't look better. He hasn't started an incline again in terms of his ability. I think he's plateaued, and I don't think he was worse, but I think we're probably seeing him at the highest level he will be for the remainder of his career, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he has peaked. I think it's obvious he's peaked. What is he, 33 now? He's had a long career, a lot of injuries, a lot of fights. He's been very active as a fighter, and he carried us through COVID during that period where there wasn't much boxing on. He was boxing three times a year, cleaning up super middle. I think the best of him probably was those Golovkin fights and perhaps the early run at super middleweight.
I think you have to give him a lot of credit these days, because to fight with that frequency when you're that huge is, you know, you have to tip your hat to that sort of stuff. You also have to tip your hat to the fact that he came up to super middleweight, and regardless of whether we rate the opponents when they fought him, he went, who's got that belt? Fuck it, I'll take that. Who's got that belt? I'll knock you out. You can't argue with that. It's not up to him who's got the belts. He picked them all off one by one, battered them all comfortably. It's not his fault who had them or how they performed on the night. He did everything he had to do, and he did it in a very short space of time, which is extremely rare nowadays. So I think we have to appreciate him while he's here. Whatever he chooses to do now, he's almost done enough. And I think he'll be in a couple of big fights. But for me, huge star. And his resume speaks for itself. The number of fights he's had, the guys he's fought on the way up, the guys he's still fighting just now. And he's only failed one drugs test, which it's not too bad.
That's not bad. Not bad. Not bad. And actually, the excuse was semi-believable because of that the whole Mexican beef thing. I was like, maybe. But not only one. That's not bad. That's not
this one.
What made you want to? What made you want to bring back contaminated food report before you carry on?
The honest answer, I just had a bit of spare time, and I thought, I don't really have anything on, I don't have any competing priorities. I think my wife was working for the weekend, so I was like, shit, it's not going to eat into real life. And I think there was enough to talk about, all the Frank Smith stuff, all the Eddie Hearn stuff, all that bullshit. It just seemed like it was a topical week, and I think that's what I'll do, mate. Someone messaged me during the week, and they were like, is it coming back this week? And I was like, nah, there's the... it's just going to be as and when. But what was really interesting was, you know, when I teased it coming back that week, the reception and the interaction, people sharing it, people viewing the post and stuff, was way above what it used to be when I'd done it every week. So kind of showed me it was quite nice, like not fucking blowing my own horn, but it was nice to know people were looking forward to it coming back. You know, the views, the people that read it, the people that clicked it and shared it was, you know, was great. It was one of the best ones I've done. So, yeah, it was nice. It's nice to know the audience hasn't fizzled out and got bored of it. And then whenever there's a time to do another one, we'll do another one. But it was weird writing it again because I was like, fuck, is that still funny? Or do people still think that's worth writing about? And it'd only been like a month since I'd done one before, so I was probably putting too much pressure on myself. But yeah, it ended up going down well. And the weird thing now is people that I've written about and slagged off in the past now like WhatsApp me about it when it comes out and stuff and like reach out to me and be like, oh, fucking good, it was good issue and this and that. So like Sam Jones on the WhatsApps and that. And I rinsed Sam Jones on an issue and now he's like, oh, I better go into hiding, contaminated food for thought's coming out. I'm like, you're all right this week, man. You're all right. So yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely... it's got a place, mate, but it's just whether it's got a place on the other side of the fence, which is balancing it with everything else that I do away from writing. So, yeah, it was good.
Hopefully you enjoyed it. It's got to work for you, man. And, you know, I think it's like with a TV series. You want to leave the people wanting more. You don't want to do it until people are sick of it. You know, you don't want it to be like The Simpsons, yeah, where here we are 34 seasons in and like the people are still watching that. People are still watching The Simpsons. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I imagine the people in boxing, there's so many fucking sycophants around and they get the people that, you know, that hold the cameras up and interview them. It's probably refreshing to have someone to say, yeah, but you're full of shit there, mate.
Yeah. And I spoke to I ended up on the phone about something completely different to Ben Shalom last week for about 40 minutes, just kind of off the record, him clarifying some things, and I ended up not writing an article I was going to write, blah, blah, blah. But I had to say to him at the start of the call, I was like, because I know that they weren't happy about a few issues because the comms guy from Boxer reached out to me and said, you know, Ben's upset, I'm not happy about this, or blah, 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 which is fine, he's within his rights to feel that way. But when I spoke to him on the phone, he was like, no, it's fucking, like, people like you need to be doing what you're doing. There's so many other people just acting on behalf of promoters or spinning it as though they're independent media. He's like, I don't care, like, whatever you write about me, I might not be happy about it, but you should fucking keep doing it. You need to keep doing it. And I've had a lot of bits of feedback like that from people that I've mentioned, the guys at Fight Disciples who I rinsed a few times in a row. And he messaged me, like, no hard feelings, like, the stuff's great, keep doing it. We don't take it personally. So people can detach themselves from the fact they were mentioned. And I think sometimes in boxing, people can point at themselves and laugh at themselves as well and go, fuck, I do sound like a company man, or I shouldn't have said that. That does sound a bit stupid. Or, you know, you have to have that self-deprecation, I think, if you want to succeed in an industry like boxing where you're constantly exposed to sound bites and clips and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
No, well, it comes back when it comes back and, you know, we'll all be looking forward to it. And I imagine, you know, it's not like you're lying to anybody. You're just telling the truth, but in a really funny way, yeah, you know. I nearly said something.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
You're very welcome. You think Charlo will go back to 154?
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe 160, maybe he stops off at 160 while his brother's sorting himself out. I don't think anybody will be scared to fight him now and maybe... you know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it opens doors for him in terms of securing other fights. I seen Terence Crawford kind of scoffed at the idea that he could be asked fighting him again. I think what that fight did was it kind of put me off the idea of a Canelo Crawford fight. Don't get me wrong. I'm watching the shit out of that if it happens. But it kind of reinforced the reason that weight classes are there, especially when you get to those middle regions where there's like a stone between two weight classes. It's not like, you know, the 125s of the world where, you know, you've got Warrington Wood this week. The difference in weight classes can be about 3 or 4 pounds sometimes. Those guys, you're talking about 7 pounds, half a stone every two classes. So, I think Charlo will go back down. Interested to see what happens with his brother as well. And I don't know, Charlo Crawford's a good fight. I just can't see Crawford losing that fight.
No,
he's too good. He's too good.
The thing is, in you'll know it is better than I will. In elite boxing, elite fighters hate to lose. They fucking detest it. Even, and I'm not saying Ricky Hatton was an elite fighter, but he had an elite mentality. The Geezer lost to Mayweather and fell off a cliff because he hated losing that much. Some people won't leave the house for days on end after losing a fight. Jamel was okay losing. He was fine. It didn't bother him. There's certain people, you know, there's certain fighters that don't mind losing. And Jermell proved himself to be that kind of fighter. That if he lost, he didn't care. He got paid a few quid. And that's that, really. And I think that's probably the one negative that's come out of PBC is that they've all made fantastic money. They all get paid. You never hear a fighter saying, Al Haymon ripped me off. And that's great, right? But someone said, I saw someone on Twitter say, you can't put a businessman in a dogfight. He needed to be in a dogfight at the weekend. And he just wasn't interested in having it. He was interested in not getting knocked out, getting to the 12th round, getting the check, and then going back to 154 or maybe going to 160. If I was him, I'd go to 160 because he doesn't seem to want fun. You know, we talk about Canelo's voice going up an octave when David Benavidez is mentioned. You mentioned Tim Zhu to Jermell, and he starts to do a little bit like this, Craig.
I think it's interesting. I think you touched on something there, which always kind of, it's always something that I wonder about. And you mentioned that elite fighters never think they're going to lose or they're never happy losing. And I always think to myself, is it always a negative thing to be aware that you're in danger of losing against another top fighter? Or does it add an extra level of awareness when you're in the ring? Does it add another level of preparation, you know, before the fight? To be on edge and to know that someone equally at the top of the sport, you're fighting them, and I get that whole like steely mentality of I will not be beaten, I am the best, I am this and I'm that, and I know you have to have that to an extent, but I do wonder, and maybe the answer's no in boxing, by the way, but I do wonder sometimes, having that little bit of doubt, having that little bit of this is an outcome that is possible here if I switch off or if I don't take it seriously, I wonder if it's always a bad thing or if there's a space for that in boxing at the top level.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think there is, and I think that's why negotiations drag on perhaps as long as they do, because these fighters know that I could lose this. So they want to get two things. They want to get paid as much as they can, but also they want things to be in their advantage. And that's, we were talking earlier on about credit to Canelo, and that's the other thing you have to credit Canelo with, is with the Billy Joe Saunders fight. That was perhaps, you'd think, you know, out of Callum Smith and Caleb Plant and Billy Joe Saunders, I think at the time, out of the three, you think Billy Joe Saunders, that could be the one. And then Billy Joe Saunders came in with the whole, oh, I want a 22-foot ring. And Canelo goes, yeah, go on then. He was like, oh, 22-foot ring, I'm pulling out the fight. And Canelo goes, yeah, all right, no problem. It's like, fuck. He won the fight there. As soon as he said that, he'd won the fight. It was over. And Billy Joe Saunders actually did all right until he got hurt and quit. But
I think he's another one. He was never going to put a dent in Canelo, and it's all good boxing in the back foot and being slick and stuff. But if you can't hurt the guy and the guy's content to march you down, it's going to be really hard to nick a decision, especially against someone who's a house favorite and it's in, you know, Vegas or whatever it was. And It is a weird one. I fucking love it when people do that. You know, when boxers go, yeah, cool, no worries.
Inoue is another one.
Yeah, and I think we've seen it with Usyk. We've seen it with Usyk in the Fury stuff as well, which ended up getting a bit tangled at the end. But when Fury was doing his video, why don't we just take away the rematch clause? And Usyk was like, yeah, sound, all good. Because you're like, oh shit, you've made me look like an asshole here. Okay, what about this? Yeah, cool, no worries. Yeah. Let's do that as well.
Yeah, no, it was like, oh, 70-30. Yeah, all right, fine. It's weird to me that you're counting another man's money. That's so strange to me. Take what you get paid what you're getting. He gets paid what he's paid. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about what I'm getting. You worry about what you're getting.
Yeah.
It's very weird. It's, well, I'm not an elite boxer and I've never been that near that sort of money. So I'm sure they know what they're doing. You're right though. There is something in that, in kind of the top level, when you see that kind of element of danger. And I always get dug out for mentioning Mayweather on the pod, and I really try to skirt my way around it, try not to do it, but it makes me think of Mayweather Pacquiao. Mayweather was ripped. He was ripped on the scales. He was serious business. And I remember at the end of the fight, Jim Lampley said, Floyd was serious business all the way through. He took this seriously. Manny Pacquiao's thanking Floyd for the fight. He's taking selfies in the ring walk. He's taking selfies at the weigh-in. And it's like, there's one guy who will not lose, and there's a guy that doesn't mind. That doesn't mind if he does or not. And it's just that mentality. It's a difference in kind of mentality. And I think what we saw in Jamel is that he doesn't have the mentality, you know, of a Mayweather or, you know, that sort of level, but who not many people do, right? You mentioned Callum Smith a couple of times, and I wrote it down. I wrote it down because I wanted to ask you before I forget. Do you give him a shot against Better Beev in January?
I think Better Beev's at that weird age, isn't he, where any fight now, his age will expose itself. Do you know what I mean? Like whatever fight, it could be the next one, it could be the one after. Every fight now, the odds are going to get a little bit tighter and a little bit tighter. I mean, I was honestly so disappointed in Callum Smith when he fought Canelo. I was so disappointed. He was huge. He was always in great shape. You know, he looked like he was hitting. You know, he was knocking guys out. You know, really heavy-handed, technically pretty solid. I was so disappointed in his performance. I was like, what was the point in turning up? You know, all this hype, chasing the fight, you know, it was billed as like, you know, the Brit that could do it and all this sort of stuff. And he didn't offer anything at all. So that makes me think twice about, all right, cool, you know, he came back at light heavyweight. He left the boy Lennon Castillo twitching on the canvas on one of the AG undercards. You know, he fought another guy for a European title or a European, I don't know, a bobble of some sort. Like, that's all well and good. But when he steps in against a guy like Beterbiev now, does he then go back into that shell again as soon as he gets hit or as soon as he can't walk someone down? Or I don't know, and it feels weird saying it, but is his biggest win an older, injured George Groves?
Mm. Yeah.
Is that his biggest win?
It is at this point, yeah, because...
So...
He won that belt. He beat George Groves. He never did anything with it. I know he had a baby in that time. In that there was a period where he was inactive for ages after beating Groves, and I think he had a baby. Although he didn't have the baby, his missus had the baby. but yeah, it is. It is at this point. It's winning that final because didn't he get a bye or something? He got a substitute during the tournament and.
Skoglund, remember? Skoglund had to retire for a brain injury, and they replaced him with a Dutch kickboxer.
Yeah, yeah.
Nicky Holmgren or something like that, who'd barely had a professional fight. But then he had obviously the one with Ryder, where everyone thought Ryder had deserved to nick that fight on the cards. And I'm struggling to think of a bigger performance. And then he eventually makes it up to the very pinnacle of the sport, fighting Canelo. And offers very, very little. So my danger is he does the same again. I think Beterbiev will stick it on him. The only question maybe you could have is Beterbiev is getting guys out of there normally before the 8th, 9th, 10th round. You know, if he makes it to the middle rounds and he's still got plenty in the tank, Callum Smith, could he start to wear him down? Does he catch him with a... You know, he's got that lovely catch counter, doesn't he? He can catch people when he's on the defensive as well. So maybe it gets a bit interesting in the second half of the fight, but you'd have to fancy Beterbiev, I think.
You would. He's like, that's the thing I always think about when I think about the fight. I just think it's Callum Smith's performance against Canelo. You know, it's the first and only time he's been at that kind of elite level, and he just didn't turn up at all. And there's not really much else to go on because Groves, you know, he'd had the shoulder. They had to kind of rush him back to make the final because it had to be at this certain time. Yeah. In hindsight, I think Groves maybe regrets it, although maybe he doesn't because he got paid very well for it. And so, yeah, it was just... There's not much really to go on with Callum Smith. And he's not really done anything at light heavyweight. You go, well, fuck me, that was a great win. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing... He's kind of just put... Because he had a WBC kind of ball, he's kind of managed to politic his way straight into a mandatory situation, which is fair enough. I think age is going to be the factor, but I think Better Beev could get him out of there by halfway. But it's still a way off, but it was just because we've mentioned him a couple of times, I just wanted to ask you about it, that was all. How much had you seen of Jaya Pattaya before the weekend?
Not much. Not much, mate. I'd seen him against Paredes. And I wasn't sure whether that was Opataya being great or Bredis being falling off a cliff, to use your phrase from earlier on, because Bredis has become a bit of a wacky caricature of a guy now, isn't he? With dressing up as Super Mario and releasing a fucking rap song, talking about Jake Paul, and he's almost just become a bit cringe. So I wasn't sure if it was either or. And to be honest, I'm probably still not sure, because I think hopefully you'll agree, maybe not, but Jordan Thompson should never have been in there, mate. Come on, man. Jordan Thompson nearly got stopped off one of the boys he fought a couple of fights ago. Then his warm-up fight for this, or his fight directly before this, was Luke Watkins, who's been floating about sort of English level for the last 5 years, 10 years maybe. It made me feel a bit uncomfortable watching the fight, to be honest. I didn't enjoy watching it. I enjoyed watching Opetaia work, and he's very aggressive and you know, he's predatory, but it was a lamb to the slaughter for me. It was uncomfortable to watch it, to be honest. And Jordan Thompson took a beating. He wasn't stopped with one big shot. He took a beating. He was too brave for his own good as well. And it only went 4 rounds. So.
Yeah, his face was a mess. And by the halfway through the fourth round, his face was a complete mess. I remember getting towards the end of the third round. I think he'd been dropped by then. And he'd gone back to the corner. His face is a mess. And I thought, pull him out. Like, pull him out, please. Just... And then Tony Sims goes, I'm going to give you one more round. It's like, why? For what? For what possible reason are you giving him another round? Like, he's being battered. He's getting hurt. Yeah. Every time Opetaia was landing a straight left hand, he was being hurt. And then he got him out of there. You're right. It was nice. It was good to see him. And I see what Matchroom have done. They've put, you know, they've signed a guy from Australia. They brought him over to England because Matchroom are predominantly a British promoter. They don't have much of a presence in Australia. And they've tried to introduce him to a British audience. So put him with a British fighter. Fine, makes sense, get it. But they've put him in with someone that's just completely out of his depth. And I said this to John last time. Just why did they just let him go and sign with a fucking boxer? Because they've got no one to match him with. They're going to put him in the rematch with Breedis. You know, you never know what will happen there. But they've got nothing for him. And he looked, actually, one thing I did notice, he looks quite small for a cruiser. He doesn't look he looks like a light heavy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's not the biggest. And I think just to go back to your boxer and Matchroom chat, I think that, and this is something I've spoke to people involved about directly, I think there is a growing thought that maybe he was used as a bit of a power play by Matchroom, that signing was used as a bit of a power play, a bit of a, we're bigger than you, we can do this, you can't, you know, we'll outbid you in purse bids. Yeah, I think Matchroom's long-term strategy for Jai Opetaia is probably still up in the air. I don't think they really have one. I think they just wanted to obviously sign a great fighter to a deal and stick him on their platform, but I think it was probably more about knowing how invested Boxer were to trying to get a deal done, which I think was at the very advanced stages. And when that showed signs of being ready to go, or it showed signs of maybe there was a little bit of wriggle room, Matchroom then imposed themselves and were a bit sneaky about getting something done. And that this fault lies on both sides, right? If Boxer aren't tight enough or aren't robust enough to make sure a deal gets done without fucking about back and forward, then they're open to having something stolen from under their noses. But I think the politicking from some of our broadcasters, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that I think boxing fans would probably be amazed to hear. So
yeah,
where Opetaia goes, if he fights in the UK again, who knows? Who does he fight? Does he have a unification with my good mate Chris Billam-Smith? Does he fight Richard Riakpor? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I don't believe he is a major part of Matchroom's plans moving forward. I don't think I'm the only one that would think that.
I'd be surprised if he is, just because they don't, off the top of my head, I don't know if they've got any cruiserweights really, you know, on their roster really to match him with, really. They're gonna do the Breedis rematch, and you know, I don't know where they'll have that, if they'll have that back over in Australia, if they'll have it in you know, in Latvia, or maybe somewhere back in England. On an AJ undercard maybe, or out in Dubai, or you know, somewhere, something like that, so they both get paid a few quid. It's a weird one, and it makes me kind of think of Charles Martin, because you know, when Anthony Joshua fought Charles Martin, they just threw the book at Charles Martin and got him over and got the belt. And it's almost like Boxer needed to do that. So, you know, if you believe in Riakpor, if you believe that he can beat Jai Opetaia, we'll fucking throw the book at him, get him over, get the belt, fuck him off again, and then you're off to the races then, aren't you, really? because they kind of messed around. That happened a couple of times, didn't it, with that fight with Opetayo Riakpor, and now they've missed out, and that fight's dead now. And you know, unless one of the boxer guys ends up going the other way over to Matrim, which you never know. You never know.
And these are the kind of deals that fans don't really pay much attention to, right? Because if you don't make Riakpor Opetayo, you don't just miss out on that fight, you miss out on control of a portion of the world title. And every other fight that Opetayo has now will have a deal built in, which will probably give Matchroom or DAZN primary option on the next fight or the next three fights. So as soon as you drop the ball on something like that, it's not just one fight that's been missed and another Riakpor will have to come again. It's potentially locking the door on that world title until something dramatic changes. And that's where all the politics and the fucking about comes in. But yeah, cruiserweight's at a decent stage right now where there are some tasty fights bubbling, but we just need to see them, don't we? Domestically, we started to see a few decent ones. I think Isaac Chamberlain, Mikel Lawal is a great co-support. Yeah. It's a great co-main event for a British card. That's a good fight. Billum Smith's obviously world champion. Okoli's still messing about down there. You know, it'll be interesting to see where it goes, but let's just throw them together because none of those guys are really young. They're all in their 30s now as well. So let's make it happen.
Yeah, I kind of think, you know, there was the Billum Smith Okoli rematch that was kind of been spoken about, but it's gone very quiet. You think Okoli would go up to heavy and then, you know, maybe you could just put in Riakpor with Billum Smith. They fought before. I know Riakpor stopped him the first time, but Billum Smith's... Did he?
Whoa. I will not have any Billum Smith slander.
They're not stopping them.
It was a very narrow points victory for Riakpor.
My apologies, I thought he stopped him.
Contentious, some may say.
I'll have to look that up. I reckon what I heard is that Billum Smith quit. I thought he stopped him. So there's I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot. I think, why don't you just make Billum Smith against Riakpor, you know, make the rematch. You know, Billum Smith, it can be, I don't know what you could call it. You could call it kind of no more quitting or something like that. He lost the split. I thought he stopped him. Don't know where I got that.
I'm very invested in Chris Billum Smith's career, mate. It's the only person that I try and... that I can't be impartial about. He's such a nice guy.
That's fair. See, I see that he does some stuff for Boxing News, and I remember when Rob Tebbit was at Boxing Social, he would feature Chris Billum Smith quite a lot. And so that made, to be honest with you, Craig, that makes me go the other way. People like him, do they? Oh, people think he's a nice guy. I'd be fucking losers next time out. I'm sure he is a nice guy. I'm sure he is.
That would explain your love for Mayweather, I suppose, that opposites attract.
I do. Angle. Yeah, genuinely, I do that. If someone's really loved and is the darling, I go the other way. I don't know what that is. I just do. Let's talk about this weekend. We won't go massively in depth just because it's Friday and the fight's tomorrow and I don't want to date the pod too much. But there's a few fights. We'll just quickly get some quick predictions. It's Lee Wood against Josh Warrington. For the WBA featherweight title. At first I've kind of thought, Lee would have battered him, he'll stop him, la la la, Josh Warrington's done. But actually I think it might be a pretty decent fight.
I've just seen a picture of Josh Warrington on the scales and he looks absolutely horrendous.
Oh dear.
So I'm going to go Lee Wood to stop. Okay. I'll go Lee Wood to stop him between 5 and 8, I'll say. He looks extremely gaunt on the scales. Yeah. But I listened to Matt and Alex Steedman on the Boxing News podcast and they were talking about it. And they both thought it would be a really competitive, exciting fight. I don't disagree. I think it will have its moments even if it goes short. I think they're both probably well matched. I don't think either of them are at the top of the weight division, so I think it's probably like a good time for them to fight. It's probably just a bit earlier than coming too late. In another year, I think it would be too far gone for the two of them. I think there'd be an obvious slip in either one of them by that point. So I think it's just at the right time for it happening to make it still relevant, still fun, still an exciting fight.
And you'd think,
who do you think will win?
Yeah, now you said he looks terrible on the scales. He's one of those that kind of flirted with the idea of going to 130. So yeah, you got to pick Lee Wood. He's the puncher in the fight. Josh Warrington's looked on the wane for quite some time, probably since the first Lara fight. He's managed to skate by. I think the other thing is he's coming off a loss, isn't he? You know, he lost to Lopez, but Lopez is a great fighter. We saw in the Michael Conlon fight, he's destructive. If you get in front of him, and he did well, I think he went the distance in the end, didn't he, Warrington? You know, to stand in front of a guy like that Michael Conlon did, his tactics that night were unbelievably bad. He just tried to just steam in against a guy that punches that hard. It was amazing. I think Lee Wood will probably stop him. I agree with you. I think sometime in the middle rounds. Does Terry Harper, Cecilia Breakhouse, do anything for you at 154? Breakhouse is kind of, she retired, she lost to McCaskill, and she's come back. Do you think give her much of a chance against Terry Harper?
When you say do anything for me, do you mean boxing wise or?
Yeah, in terms of as a fight, yeah.
No, not much. I think probably it would be Terry Harper on points. It would be the bet, wouldn't it? I don't imagine the odds are super long for that. Mm. Breakhouse is a fair age now, and I think she had this period of time where women's boxing was still on the rise and she was dominating, you know, consistently for about 10 years. Mm. You know, I think she was undisputed for a super long period of time. It's a different landscape now, and I think Harper's just too young, too fresh. I quite like Terry Harper. I think she's good. Mm. I think she's decent. And I think she'll win on points.
Yeah.
I don't think she stops her, but yeah.
No, I agree. I think points. I think I just guess in women's boxing there isn't many point, knockouts really, is there? Seeing Caroline Dubois get a knockdown last week was a bit of a treat. It's like you don't see that very often. So it was good to see. And then over stateside, I'm actually stunned that these two haven't boxed before because they've both been with Top Rank for a while. Zerdo Ramirez and Joe Smith Jr. It's going to be Ramirez, isn't it? He's going to be too big at that weight. Is it Cruiser?
Neither of them are cruisers, are they? Oh, I don't know if I like that, to be honest. You would imagine it would be Ramirez. Although sometimes when you watch Ramirez, you wonder if he can really be arsed boxing, don't you? You watch him I remember when he was with Golden Boy. He was with Golden Boy for years, wasn't he? And before he kind of jumped ship to Top Rank in the last few years. And he was always that guy that was like 39-0 or 40-0, but he never really fought anybody. I think his best win for a long time was Jesse Hart at super middleweight. And Joe Smith's the kind of guy you can never really count him out. You know, you'd probably imagine he loses the fight, but you wouldn't be surprised if he turns it on and somehow just stops Ramirez in the fourth or fifth round with a big flurry of punches. He's very likable. I think is he a builder or something like that?
And
get out the builders, Frank Smith. You would imagine Ramirez wins it. I'll say probably points if Joe Smith's still got enough in the tank and if he's been training and staying fit.
Yeah, no, you would think. I need to double check this. Is it Cruiser now? It's a light heavy.
Jesus, man.
So sorry. I thought it was a Cruiser. It wasn't getting better. I doubted myself and I'm glad I did. It's a light heavy. That doesn't change much, does it really? I still think Zerdo's the fresher guy. Bigger man naturally. I thought it was a Cruiser. So sorry. You'd think Ramirez. You'd think Ramirez would win that pretty comfortably. One final thing before I let you go. I know you've got stuff on. Do you think Fury Usyk happens?
I'm quite stunned at everybody's like boundless enthusiasm for that announcement last week. I think I put a tweet out that got a bit of traction where I was like, we've done this before with other fights. There is an agreement being signed, but no, like nothing ever happens. So I'm at a stage now where I'm like, if it happens, great, superb. I've almost made peace with the fact that it won't happen. And that's from previous chat on it, previous negotiations that have fallen through. I'll nail my colours to the mast and say that this round of negotiations or this agreement won't lead to the fight happening next.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Do you know what makes me think it will is that the TV companies are posting about it.
Yeah.
That's what makes me think, okay, because I saw TNT were posting about it, Top Rank, ESPN. I thought, okay, if this was Queensbury, right, if Queensbury were posting and Fury was posting, I'd be like, eh. But when I saw TNT get involved and Top Rank get involved and tweet about. I was like, okay, and Instagram, it was Instagram I saw those two. I thought, right, if the TV companies are involved, they're not going to really, they're not going to tolerate any fuckeries, really. They're not going to advertise something that, you know, that they kind of half know is not really going to happen. That's the only thing that makes me think, maybe it will. But you're right, and, you know, I remember somebody said, and I don't know who it was, some old timer, I think from the States, unless you see a venue in a date, it's not done. And we don't have a venue and we don't have a date. So that's the one thing that makes me, that does make me slightly worry. I'm just hoping Usyk turns up.
Oh, mate, I would absolutely love Usyk to win. And if it's in Saudi, you know, the big man's linked to Saudi with skills challenge and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's not as though he would be fighting on enemy soil,
no.
Which it seems to me as though it would be a kind of level playing field. So the one big thing for me is I look at both guys and everyone talks about their footwork and stuff. For me, the big difference in the fight, obviously Fury's a lot bigger, blah, 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 but when you assess their footwork, like everything Usyk does is thought out, it's well drilled, there aren't silly mistakes, there's not really sloppiness. Fury's got really good feet for a big guy, but he's very sloppy as well. You know what I mean? He crosses his feet, he's seen against Steve Cunningham, he gets clipped against Wilder, his feet are all, you know, he's a good mover, he's not a well drilled, every single thing is thought out, every single thing is to the letter. He does make mistakes, and Usyk doesn't really make many mistakes, and that's the thing for me when I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if Usyk beats him on points, mate.
Do you know what? The more I think about it, I think you're right. There's a few things here. You're right. Fury's obviously very good, but he's died out on his size for a while. He gets, you know, and this is why I can't get along. Pound for pound, stupid, and it's just a bit of fun. But I can't get along with him being in the top 10 because he's just so fucking big and his size is such a big part of his success. But yeah, there's that. He's slowing down. He's not the fighter he was. He is not as good as he was in the first, say, Klitschko fight or the first. He's not. He's not that fighter anymore. He's definitely slowed down. He can get clipped. And of late, he's fighting, you know, Wilder, who's kind of a massive puncher, but technically not very good at all. He's fought Dillon White, who looked horrible. Then he's fought, you know, 12-loss Derek Chisora, which was kind of a spar, to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now he's fighting a UFC guy. He is playing a dangerous game in terms of getting prepared for the number two, number one heavyweight in the world and arguably the greatest cruiserweight of all time. He is not... This is not the preparation for this level of competition, really. Even Usyk in fighting Dubois, he's still fighting a massive lump who's coming to win. You know, fighting, you know, Francis Ngannou, Chisora, White, none of those guys came to win. None of them did. They came to get paid. Usyk's coming to win, you know. So...
And he just looks in horrendous fucking shape.
He looks
terrible, man. And I know that's part of his whole thing, but, you know, exceptionally so. And if they're talking about it being at the end of this year and start of next year, what's he giving himself? A couple of months? When does he fight Ngannou? 28th of October?
Correct, yeah.
So he's giving himself 2-3 months to try and get in the shape of his life to have the fight of his life. I don't know, man. I don't think it's a landslide in Fury's favour. I don't think he should be a sizeable favourite. I think it's a really close fight.
Yeah, I think you're right. And if anyone can find a way out of the biggest fight in boxing, it's Tyson Fury. He'll find a way to get out of it if he possibly can, because he's never seemed keen on fighting Usyk. But anyway, that will do. Thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure as always.
Yeah, let us know when you're next putting something out and we'll give it a push for you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Sports Social Podcast Network.